Today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. NoCD are dedicated to creating a better everyday life for people with OCD by making care more accessible, more connected, and more effective. NoCD now deliver exposure and response prevention sessions with an OCD-trained therapist directly inside the NoCD platform, done over face-to-face video conferencing. To connect with one of their OCD therapists, schedule a 15-minute free, confidential call with NoCD's intake team. To find out more, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. That's go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or visit our website for a link. Hey guys, and welcome to episode 212 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I interview Stephen Smith, who is the founder of NoCD. And Stephen was on the podcast a couple of times in the very early days of it, and he did briefly share his story there. But in this episode, he's far more open. He goes into much more depth, and we talk about why that is and about how he was kind of dealing with shame and not wanting to open up and share his story more. So I really appreciate him coming on to go into more depth, and I found it really moving, and I've had the privilege of getting to know him over the last few years. It's been a real honor. So, you know, it's a pleasure for me to share him and his story with you. In it, he goes into a lot of detail about his story, dealing with shame, hitting rock bottom, contemplating suicide, figuring out that it was OCD, realizing there was hope, finding treatment for the OCD, getting a diagnosis, creating NoCD, dealing with a relapse he had. We talk about general mental well-being, how OCD affects him now, creating a new relationship with his thoughts, dealing with stigma, and what Stephen would have liked to have known at the start of his journey. Words of hope and much, much more. So, as I mentioned, I really enjoyed this episode. I appreciate his time and hope his story helps you. And without further ado, here he is. On the podcast today, I have Stephen Smith, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. Stephen is the founder and CEO of NoCD. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thanks, Stu, for having me. No worries, really appreciate man. It.
Yeah, I should say welcome back. You've of course been on the show twice before, back in the early days, and you were then talking about NoCD. So we will have a question on that later, but this episode is mainly about you and your story. So as little or as much detail, it'd be good to hear your story.
Definitely. And I know in the last few times, I struggled kind of opening up in specific detail about what I went through. And, I think it's partially due to the shame that often comes alongside OCD. Right.
Yep.
So going to try to open up more here and talk a little bit more in depth as to, you know, what I went through and, you know, how it helped kind of shape me and shape some of the work that we're doing at NoCD.
Nice. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, man, the floor is yours. So, share whatever you want.
Sure. Well, so this is kind of an overall recap of my story. I was a former college football player. So in the U.S. football, you know, it's a little different than European football. But we, I grew up playing football my whole life, other sports as well. And, after my sophomore year of college, things were going great. I was the starting quarterback at my university. I came off a great year. Things were going well in school. Things were going well socially. I just actually was entered into my first real serious relationship, and it was, it was an incredible relationship. And kind of a fast forward, she's my fiance now, and we're preparing our wedding this year, which is exciting. But at the time we were just starting out, and so things were going really well. Very stressful though, just going through university. After I went home for summer break though, it was challenging because I was entering into a long distance relationship, and also I was kind of back into my family environment. I'm one of five kids, so there's obviously some stress and chaos that comes along with that. And started then all of a sudden one day experiencing intrusive thoughts associated with my girlfriend. And which kind of makes sense. I just was starting in a long distance relationship, and there was stress there, but at the same time, like, the thoughts were sticky, where I really couldn't get them out of my head. Right. And, there were thoughts about, whether or not she was the right one for me, whether or not she loved me, all these different specific themes related to ROCD, and I didn't know at the time. And she, obviously is an extremely supportive person. So, it was challenging as to like, why would I start to all of a sudden think that? But because the thoughts were so distressing, what I would do is to try to disprove them, I would Google search. I would try to find the meaning as to why all of a sudden I had these thoughts and why couldn't I get them out of my head. And Google search more and more and more until I would literally try to find specific definitions of love and try to find specific reasons for why people have these types of thoughts. And I would read every single felt like blog, and I would had every single keyword down in search to make sure that I had that right answer and that my thoughts could go away. And it was all about finding the right answer to make that thought stop, because the thoughts were creating me so much distress. And so obviously, though, because OCD manifests where you have these thoughts and images or urges, and you try to make them go away, compulsions, right? The compulsions make the thoughts worse, and so I was ended up getting worse. And so, I was slowly but surely seeing my life deteriorate, where I wasn't able to train for football. I wasn't able to complete some summer school courses that I was trying to complete. And I, realized things were pretty challenging. So I made the realization, well, I probably should go try to find some help, because, all of a sudden I've had this extreme anxiety, and things aren't really improving, right? And so I went to try to find an in-network therapist, and the therapist basically told me, for every time you have a thought, I want you to take a rubber band and snap it across your wrist. And I knew nothing about mental health care at the time, and so I was like, well, this person has a PhD. He studied at Northwestern University, and he seems pretty credible. So, I'm gonna listen to what he said. So I literally had a rubber band around my wrist, and I started snapping it every single time I had a thought, and then those thoughts grew worse. So I went and ended up having some other thoughts about, my girlfriend, my fiance at the time, which I'm actually pretty shameful of still, and it's hard for me to talk about. But ended up getting to a point where, I just was kind of stuck in my room, and I would go out and I would walk past people, and I would any person I'd see, they would trigger me, right? And I couldn't even go to the grocery store, I couldn't do some other things, but I'd still try to keep things going. Therapy didn't work because it was thought stopping, it was taking rubber band, snapping across my wrist. So I was like, well, I'm getting worse. I'm still not able to do some of the things that I need to do, school, train for football, et cetera. So I'm gonna try to find somebody else. And so I went to another person, and basically she told me that you should probably move away from your family, because they're the ones that are causing you all this distress. So the family is what's causing these thoughts, and as a result, if you move away from them, you'll get better. So it was some type of some principle she had. I'm not sure the exact treatment she was doing, but it wasn't effective, it wasn't evidence-based, and still had no diagnosis of what was going on. And so but again, I didn't have anything to lose at the time, and I was getting worse. And so I said, well, maybe I'm going to go and move away from my family. And so right around that time too, I started having sexual intrusive thoughts that kind of coincided with the ROCD. Again, the sexual intrusive thoughts, stuff that it was very, very difficult for me to manage. Specifically, it was starting to get into themes related to HOCD, that complemented the ROCD and just made my life extremely, extremely challenging. And so this, and the therapist was saying too at the time, she's like, well, maybe, your thoughts really mean something. Maybe you should try to find the meaning as to why all of a sudden you had these sexual intrusive thoughts in combination with the ROCD. And that just drove me up a wall. And it's nothing, no disrespect to different communities out there today. It was just because that's not who I was, and it didn't resonate with me. And so I wanted things to stop, though. I got in my car, drove from Chicago all the way down to San Antonio, Texas. And because that's where I was going to school at the time. That's where, I was successful. And if I thought that if I drove down to Texas, my thoughts would stop, right? I thought I would get my mental peace back. And of course, that didn't work, looking back. And so went to try to get pick up my life and things that I would normally be able to do. Still, I couldn't go to the store, I couldn't get groceries, because I would walk past somebody and I would think, you know, I would just, you know, check my body for physical sensations. I would have thoughts saying, well, you know, all these different things, and it would just be a living nightmare just to even do anything. So anyways, I was by myself. I ended up becoming housebound in San Antonio, Texas, and I couldn't really do anything. So here I was trying to make ends meet. I was temporarily scrubbing floors at a boxing gym. That was the only way I could just keep my rent until I wasn't able to do that anymore. And I was just kind of by myself alone. And then that's when, Stu, I started developing severe depression because I was at the point where I was trying to get back to school. Summer break was pretty much over. I was out of school. I was out of football. You know, I was just kind of completely at rock bottom suffering, and developed severe depression. And this is the part in the story where, for me at least, it brings back a lot of emotion just because it was such a difficult time. And I'm, you know, I remember driving to, I was driving to different, you know, work, and there was times where I was driving and I had a plan. I was just going to drive off the side of the road. There was times where I would just realize, like, well, how can I do this without hurting anybody? And just was thinking about suicide, and didn't really know kind of which way to go. I was completely at rock bottom. Sorry.
That's okay, man.
Yeah, and I was kind of desperate. So I was suffering. I had these thoughts playing nonstop. And then, you know, it just was it they were and they were all morphing at the same time, it felt like. So then it's the ROCD somewhat stopped. It focused around the HOCD, and then it was depression as well. And then all of a sudden started getting into scrupulosity too, because I was like, well, what happens if you know, if this is if I go right to hell, and because I'm having all these blasphemous thoughts, it felt like. And what happens if I don't get better? You know, I'm thinking of suicide as well, and stuff. And so, you know, I was completely at rock bottom, and I started searching my symptoms online one day. And you know, what I stumbled across were you know, different articles by Chrissy Hodges, right? I talked to Chrissy now, she's become a great friend. Where, you know, she would post different pieces of content about similar themes, about ROCD, HOCD, scrupulosity. And you know, so I was kind of just consuming content saying, oh my gosh, what she's describing is exactly what I'm going through, right? Her struggles with depression as a result too, it's exactly what I'm going through. And it was the first time I really associated, you know, my thoughts with the condition, right? I always thought I was just, you know, had severe anxiety and I was going nuts. I had no idea that what I was going through was actually OCD. So ended up, next logical step saying, okay, well, what can I do for treatment? Where can I go? And so the next step was, okay, well, I'm going to search OCD treatment. And I started stumbling upon exposure and response prevention and started learning about it. And, you know, knowing that, okay, well, although OCD is chronic, you know, you can utilize some of these, you know, principles within ERP to manage the condition where it doesn't bother you, and you can get your life back. So that was extremely positive for me, right? At the time, I was like, oh my gosh, here I am, completely, and felt like I was in the cellar, didn't had no hope. I couldn't even scrub floors at a boxing gym, and that was a minimum wage job. And, you know, just I was just fortunate enough to have the support of my girlfriend, now fiance, was helping me through it, and her family was helping me through it. That was, I mean, it was an incredible thing that she did for me. And you know, the next step was, okay, well, now I can finally maybe get better. And so I tried to search online to find, you know, where can I get ERP therapy in San Antonio? And there was one provider in my area, and she, you know, had a $250 session rate completely out of pocket and had a 7 month wait list. So here I was, scrubbing floors at a boxing gym part time. I really couldn't even do that. Didn't have much support beyond just, you know, some of my family. And, you know, I had all of a sudden had to pay this extreme amount of money just to get treatment. And so, you know, this is where, you know, some luck came in, right? Where I was able to go and, search for help. I talked to my parents and I said, well, how can I afford this? And thankfully, my mom connected me with a family friend who covered the cost of my treatment. And you know, also my family helped get off the wait list. So I was very fortunate in that moment to have my family come in and help. It was a major blessing. And so went from there and saw that therapist, and she diagnosed me with OCD, and she helped me create my first hierarchy. She told me, "This is the first time I'm ever going to give you reassurance. Here's what you're going through. None of these thoughts really mean anything. It's just OCD, and we're going to help you get better. This is the last time I'm ever going to give you reassurance." We created, our first hierarchy, like I said, and started treatment. In between sessions, though, Stu, what would happen was I would be by myself struggling, right? Because it's, again, it's OCD ebbs and flows. So I would do my therapy 1 hour a week. I'd drive over there. I wasn't in school, wasn't doing anything, just going to therapy. In between sessions, I would try to live my life, and that's when I would get completely triggered. And so I was trying to self-manage in between sessions, and it was tough, but slowly, surely, but surely ended up getting better because I was using some of these principles of response prevention that my therapist was teaching me. And because of that, I was able to get back on my feet and started making progress and getting better. And it was from seeing this therapist that specialized in OCD and exposure and response prevention, who taught me how to accept uncertainty that, my thoughts could or cannot be true, but who knows and who cares? Just keep living. Right. And that's that principle that I started to embody. And so I got better, got back on my feet, went back to school. I finished up my degree at Pomona College in Southern California and finished up my football career there as well. And, in that process, I was like, what I went through was torture. I was misdiagnosed consistently. I pretty much almost lost everything, including my life. Right. And it didn't have to be that way, right? What if you could get diagnosed correctly, quickly, and then you can get connected to a therapist like who I saw in an affordable and convenient way, and then in between sessions you can get support, so that way you don't have to worry about struggling and having your OCD kind of go off the rails when your clinician's not there. And so I just that was kind of like a lot of what ifs happened. Like, why did this just all happen? And how can you improve the process? Because the reality is exposure and response prevention is really effective, right? And acceptance commitment therapy is as well. So it's like, what can you do to bring these effective treatments to everyone, right, that needs it and who needs it? And so that's kind of the vision that I started to have. And just kind of day by day is like, okay, well, let's really solve this problem, because it's not something that's unrealistic. I mean, we have, again, effective treatment that can help a lot of people, and we just need to make sure it can get to everybody. So created an OCD as a result, and it does really two things. First, it helps people connect to an OCD therapist that's licensed in their state, and they can do live video therapy sessions with them. And then in between sessions, when the therapist isn't there, they can use our peer communities and therapeutic tools for support, right? So you can, get support in the moment of an episode. You can get support doing your ERP treatment exercises that you do as homework. You can ask the community questions, people who understand you that are going through the same thing as you, and then you can go back and see your therapist via live video sessions, no matter where you live in your state. And the reason why we ended up doing that was because, for me at least, my other option was drive 3 hours to Houston to the Houston OCD program. I was trying to really afford resources to go there, but I couldn't do that. That's a 6 hour commute round trip from San Antonio to Houston and back. And so, so I'm just, there were so many things that I went through personally that other people are going through today that we really just want to solve for. And so that's, I know it gave a bunch of info, Stu, to you, but I guess I just, with my story, I just want to make sure others can hear it, so that way, if someone's alone suffering, they can get help and they don't have to go through what I did. And if people are going through misery with OCD, I want to make sure they know they can get better too, right? And it's just a matter of seeing an OCD therapist that specializes in exposure and response prevention, acceptance commitment therapy, CBT, and because that's the first real step, right? So you've got to get to somebody who can help you, because treatment for OCD is idiosyncratic, right? It doesn't necessarily make sense to start, right? Some counterintuitive things, like not reassuring yourself, right? It doesn't feel intuitive off the bat. So that's that's kind of why we do what we do. And our team in OCD has a lot of folks as well who suffer with OCD who went through similar experiences, as well as we have clinicians who have treated it for 20 plus years.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. And thank you for going into so much in your story. I mean, I've got some more questions around it, but I mean, I've spoken to you several times online. We've spent several weekends together over the last few years. I've heard your story in many different shapes and forms, and each time it seems to get bigger almost, or you go deeper. And I don't know, that's just really moving for me to see that and how, you gradually feel comfortable to share more and more. And I think that's, I don't say reassuring, but reassuring for those people who don't want to share their stories or who don't want to share in its entirety initially, but over time it does get easier.
It's, I think it's because of the shame, right? The shame, the shame is getting removed piece by piece, right? There's a lot of shame built up with OCD. I think that's why OCD is so severe, because it challenges some of your core principles, right? But if you can just learn to accept uncertainty over time and make that a new core principle, right, you end up coming to a point where the condition bothers you less and less over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't know, Chrissy's videos were the first things you came across.
Yeah, that was it's that's the that was it's came full circle. I remember, seeing her content, and it's again, it was so similar to what I was going through. And she did such a great job of communicating her story in detail, so that way people can hear it. And what ended up happening, I think, was because of my search terms in Google, it just connected me right away to first was one of her blogs. Back in the day, she had a lot of blogs, and so that was when that was the first piece of content I read of hers. So I reached out to her, actually, it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I just explained to her, I'm like, yeah, this without you, I'm not sure if I would have figured out I had OCD.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's motivating to hear. But I mean, you're putting content out like that now, and through the company. And I guess Chrissy back then wasn't her business, 4 or 5 years ago. So she was just doing it as an advocate. She wasn't, I don't think, a qualified peer support worker at that time. So just a simple video changed your life, and it's just shows you the power of the ripple effect of small actions.
Definitely, definitely. And it shows the hope too, right? Because now, we're in this kind of scenario where the more content we generate, the more quality content too. It's the more people will stumble upon OCD, and they'll understand the symptoms of it, and they'll be able to say, okay, that's exactly what I'm going through. And once they make that epiphany, that's when they can take the next step and go and search for treatment. And so it's really important people spread awareness via content today. And that's why it's so promising to see all the great movements that have been started online, such as even yours, Stu. Like what you're doing with OCD Stories is absolutely incredible. What Chrissy's doing, what Ethan Smith's doing with Aaron, what Harvey's doing with Made of Millions. I mean, it's just, there's so much great content that's being presented about this condition, and it's going to save a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Okay, so you were very articulate with your story, so I won't expand more on that portion. But have you know, recovery is rarely linear. Have there been any kind of lapses or relapses since that point of getting that proper treatment?
Yes, there was. There was one when actually there was one that actually pretty that was pretty challenging in particular. Then that was about a year and a half after I went back to college, and it occurred during summer break. I got a great piece of advice from Ethan Smith during that time, because Ethan and I became friends, and about a year before that. And he told me, he's like, look, you've already conquered OCD. You already know how to manage it. You just need to use the tools that you've learned to do it again, right? And it's not a relapse if you already know how to manage it. So he kind of helped me, instead of, getting down and saying, okay, I've now gotten much worse again. He already said, okay, well, no, it's OCD ebbs and flows. You already know how to manage it. you can go and do it again, right? And it's not a relapse if you already know how to manage it. So that was a really helpful piece of advice that he gave me, that ended up allowing me to say, you know what, you're right. I'm going to go and I'm going to utilize response prevention. And actually, at that point too, was using the app that we created too. We started off with just the NoCD app. It had some response prevention tools in there, such as our SOS feature. So I would use that, and I would just learn to, you know, walk through the thought with accepting uncertainty, right? So, you know, maybe this would happen. I'll accept the uncertainty and move on. Stuff like that. So what if this is if this happens or doesn't happen, right? So that's the type of guidance that really helped me during that moment that was challenging.
No, that's cool. That's good advice as well. And you know, for this process, getting evidence-based effective treatment was obviously huge. Was there anything else you did or even do to this day that you find helps, not even just with OCD, but just general mental well-being?
Yes, it's a great point. It's and we what we say too, it's treatment isn't just vertical, it's also horizontal, right? So meaning you need to, you know, keep exercising, right? You need to get enough sleep. You need to have social outlets that you can turn to, right? You can't just, you know, be in a zone and work for 20 hours a day, right? So there's a wellness component to staying healthy that also helps with OCD. And I think you and I actually last month talked about that in the UK, where we were going on about the importance of staying not just mentally well in terms of doing response prevention whenever you have an intrusive thought, but more importantly too, it's just how can you sleep well and exercise enough and keep healthy overall? Because that's definitely, for me at least, something that I've noticed is when there are weeks where I am a little bit worse because OCD ebbs and flows, right? It's typically associated with some type of change in my wellness pattern, where I may not sleep enough because we're traveling a lot or working a lot. And so I'll notice, okay, well, if I'll get back on my toolkit, my ERP toolkit, my acceptance commitment therapy toolkit, and I'm gonna also go and sleep more this week. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, kind of being alert, not hyper alert, but just alert to the changes in your body and knowing kind of, well, what's gone on? Have I got enough sleep? Have I had too much sugar or too much caffeine or, you know, kind
Right,
of,
exactly.
yeah. Cool. No, good one. So in terms of sometimes that's a question of just how does it affect you now, OCD?
Wow, it's I think, and this is just because it's a great question. I think it's at this point, my OCD has been managed to a place where I feel like I'm better than I was prior to even having OCD. So it's basically saying, like, right now, I can manage stress, I can manage uncomfortable situations even better than I did before I had the condition. So it's almost like I feel like I'm optimized at this point. There's nothing that can be really thrown our way that we can't manage, right? That's kind of my mindset today. And I think it's just because of the incredible support system I've had around me over the last decade, right? Just from all my great friends to my family, and just you know, really fortunate to have so many great people helping me, right? And I think that's why I'm here today.
Yeah, I like that. I think, several people have said before on the show, therapists and stuff, about the when you learn these tools, CBT tools, and you work to start to overcome OCD or have a new relationship with it, you don't just get better from OCD or learn to deal with it more. You can apply those skills to every area of your life. And previously, where maybe not getting a job would have really upset you, now you handle it better because it's still dealing with uncertainty and stress, but you're able to deal with those things much better because of this mammoth thing you dealt with, which was OCD.
Exactly, and that's completely true, and that's the hope. It's like people always say, "I wish." I mean, we see this all the time. I wish I had my old life back. I would even say that. I'd say, I wish I was back to where I used to be. I wish I had the happiness I used to have. And, you know, the reality of that is, though, if you can manage this condition, you'll get to a level that you didn't even realize was possible. Right? And that's the really exciting element of managing and conquering OCD. It's like you get to a level that you that is actually better than where you were before you had the condition, before the condition onset. It's a chronic condition, but right. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, so somewhat broad question, but what was there like a big light bulb moment for you in your recovery? Something that just made sense?
I think there were a couple light bulb moments. I think the first light bulb moment was when I saw Christy's content online and I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm going through. That was a huge moment for me, because it gave me understanding, right? There were other people out there who understood what I was going through as well. And so that was a huge moment. The second moment was actually probably a little bit later on. It was while I was slowly getting better. The light bulb moment that occurred was basically, why I keep fighting these thoughts. Right? I would spend so much time just fighting them. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna let them happen. I was just kind of exhausted fighting them. And that's when I started to see significant progress, right? And just like letting the thoughts happen. And that was huge. And the precursor to that was I never really knew how to implement response prevention. That was my biggest challenge. I would always research exposures. Everyone told me how to do exposures, but no one really told me how to do response prevention until I went to this OCD therapist and what I can do to actually implement response prevention into my daily life. And once I understood that and understood, okay, when my thoughts feel like this, that's when I implement response prevention, and here's what I can do to do that. That was the second light bulb moment. So that's how I would say to those two things still.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think response prevention is, yeah, it's huge, right? It's we and I did an episode on it specifically, although it became also a bit of a generic ERP episode, but it was really good. But the core of it was focusing on response prevention, because yeah, if you do the exposures but you're not doing the RP, the response prevention or ritual prevention, the exposure isn't going to work. Because you're doing this, you're doing the safety behaviors or the compulsions, so you're just undoing the facing the fear anyway. So it's almost pointless doing the fear, facing
Exactly.
it. Yeah.
Exactly. There was actually a third light bulb moment that I want to bring up briefly. I know that we're cutting cl close on
All
time here.
good.
We're good? Okay. The third one was I was actually at Jonathan Grayson's support group when we were just starting OCD, and he was super thoughtful and had me there just talking about what we were doing, and also because he knew I had OCD as well. And I was kind of talking about my experience, and I said there's still really one, trigger to me that still hasn't been managed, and it was going to church, right? It was going to church and being able to sit in church and let my thoughts happen, because I'd have a lot of the scrupulous thoughts, I have a lot of the HOCD thoughts as well. And so he basically encouraged me. He goes, look, when you go home, go and sit in this church, go do this. Right. Just he really like directly told me to go do this. And he knew I knew how to do response prevention. So I was like, okay, well, I'll go do this. And I went to go do that. And that was like, for me, it was like the feeling of climbing that last stage of the mountain, right? Where something that you really, what for me was probably the hardest exposure, but being able to do that. And that's when I was like, okay, well, I can really conquer this at any stage.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that John kind of just directly said, go do that. Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And similar question like roadblocks. So you mentioned about, not finding the right therapy and therapist. But were there any other roadblocks that kind of hindered your process? And if so, how did you deal with them?
Sure. The stigma surrounding OCD, just basically not being able to talk to others about it, right? That was a huge roadblock. I couldn't explain what I was going through because I was so embarrassed. And thankfully technology was the solution there, where Google, I was more able, I was more willing to explain to Google what I was going through than I was, a family member.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, stigma's huge, right? Less so today, but even so, it's still very much there for many, many people. But yeah, I'm sure it will get less and less over time. So,
Definitely.
yeah, so very generic question now, but just an important one. Words of hope for people with OCD.
Well, this is if you're going to have OCD now, there's so much out there to help you get better, right? This is the time if that we can really conquer this condition. And there's so much happening to make people with OCD, or to help people with OCD get better. There's so much out there now that's allowing people to do that, right? And OCD, we're a piece to the puzzle, right? But we're growing quickly. We have now an opportunity where you can go into an OCD and see a licensed therapist, a licensed psychologist, licensed counselor, licensed social worker. They all have specialty training to treat OCD. So our clinical team trains them, Dr. Patrick McGrath, Dr. Jamie Fiesner. So they're both OCD specialists that have had 20 plus years experience treating the condition. So we have these specialty therapists that people can see and do live video sessions with. And then in between sessions, they can access our peer communities and self-help tools to make sure they get that 24/7 support whenever their therapist isn't there. So it's a good example, right? So now, no matter where you live in your state, if you're there, you can access this care. You don't have to drive anymore, right? So that's the first thing. And it's all live video. There's others out there that are doing, similar things, right? Like you look at what Chrissy Hodges is doing with peer support. You look at what, you look at the different movies that have been made, right? Ethan Smith just made an incredible documentary about this condition, just raising awareness. Look at all the work that's being done by Chris Baer for children with OCD, right? With the Unstuck movie, and look at what you're doing, right? There's just so much out there now that is giving hope to people. And it just starts though with making sure people can get treatment. And so I think there's two components. There's folks that are helping identify OCD with content, with movies, podcasts, et cetera. And that's a huge problem. I mean, that's a huge solution today for a huge problem, right? Because you have, it's 10 years it takes typically for someone to get identified. I was fortunate it took me less time than that. And that's why I think I was able to get better faster. But, it's way too long to get identified today. So there's the identification and there's the management. So we're on the management front of really just making sure when people do, know they have OCD, they can go in and get treatment in an easy and affordable way. So we're starting to also work with many health insurance companies across the United States to make sure that they can offer this treatment to their members affordably. So instead of having to pay that $300 out-of-network fee per session, you can get treatment in a much, much more affordable medium. So, yeah, I mean, there's so much being done. And if you look at even social media now, I mean, just search OCD and you see all the different accounts that are there, just raising awareness for this condition. It's just unbelievable. So it's the last 5 years have been the best 5 years for OCD awareness by far than it ever before. And it's just going to get better. So, yeah, I mean, really, really special time for this revolution to occur.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's never a great time to have OCD. However, kind of asterisks, it's better to have it now than it was 200 years ago.
Oh yes. Even 10 years ago, it's better to have it now than it was 10 years ago, or even
That's
5 years
true.
ago. I mean, it's just a matter of how quickly can you get to an OCD specialist therapist, and integrate that ERP and CBT, right? That you need. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So yeah, actually, one thing I will say is, you mentioned there, Dr. Patrick McGrath, who has been on this podcast before. He was a great guest. He's a great clinician, and of course, he's with you guys full time now, I believe, as head of clinical
Full time.
services.
He is. So he just joined our team full time as head of clinical services. So Dr. McGrath is training all of our therapists to treat OCD using exposure and response prevention. So he gives them the specialty training. He's also managing all their care to make sure it's excellent care across the board. So we now have almost 50 therapists that are working at NOCD offering exposure and response prevention, CBT, et cetera, to our members, so that way they can get treatment. And Dr. McGrath is leading it, and we have a tremendous, group of others on our clinical team who are also, managing as well. So Dr. Stephanie Lonsway, Ted Fainiff, Dr. Jamie Fiesner, our chief medical officer. He's the head of the UCLA OCD Intensive Treatment Program. He's been the executive director there for about 20 years now. So he's helped us shape the protocols as well. And we're just really focused on making sure people can get a hybrid of that care, that therapy that they need, as well as that support they need when their therapist can't be there. So, and then we think if we create, we know now from research that that model is very effective.
No, it's just thought it was worth highlighting. It's great to see those guys on your team. Okay, cool. So, let's say, so you did the Words of Hope question, but let's say someone's just starting their recovery now. They're listening to this episode. Just yeah, what would you have liked to known at the start of your journey?
Sure. I'd like to know at the start of the journey, first and foremost, life gets much better, right? Probably suffering a lot right now, but, and it really as little as 3 months, you could be almost back on your feet, if not back on your feet, right? That's a really important thing to understand. The second thing to understand is to get better, it's often tough to do ERP on your own without seeing a therapist first. Right, it's because it's just a challenging. It's not a very intuitive treatment off the bat, so it's better to figure out a way to do whatever you can to see an OCD specialist therapist, someone who's licensed in the state and can give you treatment that's evidence-based. That's extremely important. And if you're scared to see a therapist, for you think that they're going to diagnose you with a different condition or they're going to, make life really challenging for you in the short term. It's basically you have to think about it. Do I want to still suffer with this condition or do I want to do this treatment? I may suffer to start a little bit, but I'm going to eventually get better. Like, what would you rather have? What scenario? And so it's really important to take that step forward into treatment if you're suffering. And then I think the third thing is once you do get better, right, which is most people do with OCD, if they get access to this effective treatment, it's important to stay better by living healthy, right? Really, live a wholesome life. Try to get your sleep, right? Try to go and exercise as much as you can. Make sure you engage with your family and friends, right? So it's making sure you have that positivity in your life as you go forward. So that's what I would recommend.
No, I like that. Okay, cool. So, you can pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. So your 20-year-old self had OCD? Was it hitting you then?
20-year-old self had OCD.
Okay, so you got the
That was just hitting me then.
you're on the phone to that young Stephen. What'd you tell him?
Well, I tell him, first and foremost, probably lay off the sweets, right? Because, at a certain age, it doesn't, you don't burn them off as easily. No. The second thing I'd say is,
Good advice.
the second thing I'd say is, just, keep your chin up, right? Because it's an extremely exhausting experience going through OCD, but life can get better, right? And just I think that knowledge of life can get better is crucial. Because if you know you can get better, you'll find a way to get better, but you have to know you can get better. And that's the I would keep it probably pretty simple. I would say too, if I could, one second here.
That's all right.
I would probably say too, it's just like every day is a new day. You have an opportunity to change the world any day you live, right? You have an opportunity to change someone else's life every day you live. So always remember that, especially if things get really bad. And that's something that looking back, I think I'm really thankful because I mean I did come very close, in my opinion, to dying by suicide. I had a plan and everything, and just was so happy that I didn't take that route because, looking at what we have now, I mean, we're able to treat hundreds of people, per month. Tens of thousands of people with OCD now are learning about this condition because of NoCD's work. And if I would have made that choice, probably none of this would have occurred. So I would have probably said something like that to my 20-year-old self.
Yeah, well, no, thank you for sharing that. And unfortunately, you can't call your actual 20-year-old self, but in a way, you have just told him. So, okay, cool. So, you've got a billboard in Chicago where you live and your head office is. What do you want written on that billboard? It can't be an
OCD can be
advert.
tough.
Sorry, go on.
OCD can be tough, but
Yeah.
you can get better.
Nice. Yeah, and finally, just is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you wish you could have shared today?
Stu, I think you asked a lot of great questions. So, I'm just very thankful to have the opportunity to be back on this podcast. It's been, a long road. I feel like with NoCD, we've been fortunate enough to grow quickly. We're growing quicker and quicker each day, it feels like. But I'm just very thankful to have all the support that you've personally given me outside of all of OC stories and NoCD work. But just as a friend, I'm very appreciative of all of your support, and I'm just really excited to see what the OC community can do together in a grassroots way, right? Which we have been doing. So,
No, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And always an honor to have you on and spend time with you.
Thanks, Stu. Really appreciate it.
So there you have it. Thank you to Stephen for his time and to you guys for listening. And don't forget, today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. To find out more about NoCD and their treatment plans, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. That's go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. Or visit the website for a link. And a quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.